All right. Hey, good morning. Welcome back. This is the I Am Sorry About Last Night podcast, part of the Social Podcast Network, www.socialpodcastnetwork.com. Local folks doing local podcasts. Good morning. September 22nd, 2025. Beautiful day here on the east side of the country. I hope it is great wherever you are at. It is Monday, start of a new week. Trash cans out. Had to call my brother this morning and wish him a happy birthday. Turned 56. We are getting old, man. 56, I turned 57. I just remember when we were like turning 15, right? And yeah, it's life goes by pretty damn fast, it seems like. And the older I get, the faster it goes. And, you know, all of a sudden I become grateful for things and appreciate things that maybe in the past I would have not paid attention to. And, you know, I don't know if it's recovery or just getting old, but, you know, I think I just care more. I mean, I think that has a lot to do with recovery, but age means caring. And so happy birthday to him. Great to see him made it this far. I'm surprised either one of us made it this far, to be honest with you. And why did we, right? I know I have a lot of friends that did not make it. Probably were a little better off earlier on in their lives when we were still out kicking up dust. But, you know, in the end, here we are, and we're still making it, thank God. And unfortunately, I've lost some good friends due to this disease. And but yeah, big weekend. You know, everything's been so going so well. I tried to do a podcast the other night or the other day and just couldn't quite get through with it. And I think it's because a buddy of mine reached out and said that he had gone back out. And he was pretty upset. And, you know, reality is that shit happens. They used to say, look to your right, look to your left. More than likely, those people will not be here in a year. Look around the room. More than likely, most of these people, including ourselves, probably will not be here in, you know, 5 years. And the chances of us being here in, you know, 10 or whatever years is very slim. And so, you know, just grateful, right? Just grateful that we're here and we're doing it. Big weekend with the Charlie Kirk Memorial. Very sad. I don't know if I'm sad or just taken back by the amount of love in the world right now. It's really cool, or at least what I'm watching. I watched the memorial in Arizona. I mean, I don't know how many people. I mean, the whole stadium was packed. 200,000-300,000, I think they said there was part of another stadium. I don't know. You know, whatever. I could see there was a lot of people. It was beautiful. I think a lot of Christian performers performed, and it was magical. And I, you know, I just kept crying. I'm like, gosh, this is brutal. And I'm not sad. I don't think it's that I'm sad. I think it's just a, you know, what it is really is a providence, right? An act of providence. When I came into this program, when I, you know, decided to change my life, it wasn't because I was sick of drinking vodka. It wasn't because I was sick of getting in fights. It wasn't because I was sick of where my life had gotten to and where it was headed. None of those things had to do with it. It had to do because I got punched in the mouth. And the devil had been knocked out of me. Shame and guilt, you know, were close by, I guess. But the idea of continuing doing this over and over again had been knocked out, and there was a small window, and I jumped through it. And I sort of feel like that is what's happening right now, right? I feel like, unfortunately, this act of providence, right? Unfortunately, the shooting of Charlie Kirk is the eye-opening moment that everyone steps back and says, wow, you know, we just got to be better, right? We just got to treat each other better. It is interesting, you know, there was no riots, no violence, no fires, no rock throwing, no name calling. Just a bunch of people, and I can't, you know, maybe there was somewhere, I don't know. But it seemed pretty chill. Unlike other events that have happened recently, it just seemed pretty chill and a lot of love and caring. And I thought it was just really beautiful. And so I don't know if it's the sadness that Charlie Kirk is gone or if it's just the, you know, watching everybody come together.
Informing Washington, a technical. Just a moment. God the Holy Ghost is calling out to bring.
Bless me, Father, for I have sinned. In the wooden chair beside my window, I'll wear a face born in the falling rain. Talk to shadows from a lonely candle, recite the phrases from the wall I can't explain. This holy pain,
Queensryche, Operation Mindcrime. That is the mission. I freaking probably, you know, in my opinion, in my style of music that I enjoy, probably one of the greatest albums ever produced, put out onto the planet, Operation Mindcrime. I don't know. It feels like it should be on Broadway. It maybe has been on Broadway. I don't know, but interesting album, interesting story, sort of kind of ties into with everything that is going on around our world. But yeah. Yeah, so I thought I would just come upstairs, see if we can do a podcast, chat a little bit, see if I can start the week off with something. I am going to, I have a couple opportunities for meetings today. I was wanted to try to go to noon today, but I'm going to go actually move boats at 11. So I think I'm going to miss it. So I'm going to go tonight, and I think it's on the third step. And, you know, I have said many times that, so-and-so step is my favorite. Oh, this step is my favorite. Oh, my gosh, this step is my favorite. But I think as far as the third step goes, it is my favorite. It's what got me here. It's what made me leave here, right? It's made me what, it's what kept me, it brought me upstairs to do this podcast. It's what made me go to the gym this morning. You know, every single thing that I do in my life is pretty much a third step. Or at least a third step opportunity. You know, the biggest thing that I can take from all of this is just the amount of caring that took place in my life. Now, I don't know if that was a spiritual malady, if that's immaturity, if that's just, you know, a straight up devil. But I can tell you, young Tom, early on, early adult Tom, just didn't care that much. And I only cared about things that got me things, right? Can you drive to the grocery store? If my mom asked, can you do this? Nah, I don't feel like it, right? Well, I'll give you 10 bucks. Bam, I'm on, right? Like, if I'm not doing anything unless I'm getting something. And I think part of that's maturity. But, you know, I see a lot of adults around me sometimes that are a lot like that. You know, they're all, everything's, I used to say, it's all hugs and kisses until you cut their bangs too short, right? You know, everybody's all excited until they got to do something that becomes an inconvenience. And, you know, my life was filled with inconveniences and fear. And, you know, and as a retired people pleaser, constantly worried, am I doing enough? Am I going to, if I don't do this, will this not allow me to do this? You know, a lot of my life spent doing things for my parents were always to make sure that I stayed in their good graces, right? Always to have that backup, right? If the shit hits the fan, I can always count on my folks. And you never wanted to get into that big argument, which basically said, I'm never talking to you again, right? And it would happen. It would happen. And, you know, my parents, my dad, And I don't blame him, but he was, you know, he was tough on us. And sorry, my buddy was calling. Yeah, my dad was tough on us, and we put up with a lot of shit from him. I'm not going to say that he was always right. I mean, even today, as a in the veterans home, you know, he can get a little testy, right? And but you never wanted to get into that conversation where you're like, you know what, go to hell. I'm never talking to you again. Every once in a while, it would happen though. My dad would make it, you know, real easy to go down that path, and a couple times, sort of towards the end of when my mom was alive, we had a couple of big blowouts. And but it was always like, you know, you don't want to get cut out of the will, right? You don't want to get kicked out of the family. You always wanted to try to stay in there somehow. Hopefully one day, you know, you may inherit something and all this tough life would become easier. It's all a figment of my imagination. And but, you know, it would happen every once in a while. And then, you know, I'd have to come back. My dad actually, my dad and I even got into an argument once. They became that way. I'm not talking to you anymore. And I would talk to my mom, and she's like, have you talked to your dad? I go, I'm not talking to him anymore. And but at some point, a few years back, I made a decision, right? I made a choice to go to my father and say, listen, I don't want to fight anymore. We don't have that much time left, and I would rather we spent it enjoying ourselves, right? My mom was going blind, and, you know, we used to take the kids over there, and from that point on, we didn't fight anymore, right? And if we started to, I would say, you know, it isn't worth it, and that's just how it was. And to me, that is the third step. And, you know, I was in recovery for many years before I started to really understand the concept of the third step, which is, you know, made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of a God of our understanding, right? A God of our understanding, not a God of your understanding, but of our, mine, understanding. And one thing this step allowed me to do was to start making better choices, right? Two, it started to see my better choices reflect in my life. Three, it started to see my life improve, right? And as a person that's an ex-people pleaser, it started to relieve me of this constant worry if I was going to be kicked out of the family, right, or get caught, right, you know, lose my job. You know, I took a job, and when I came into recovery, I was like, you know, full of piss and vinegar, right, went to college and picked a career that I absolutely hated. You know, was I going to be worried that they were going to figure out that I actually hated this job, right? It was all of this stuff. And, you know, over time and listening to the Joe and Charlie tapes, I started to understand, you know, what this third step really was. And a guy coming from where I came from, which was I didn't care about anybody else's feelings but mine, you know, to start making better choices and see them, right? And what was the first choice I even made, right? When the lady asked me, do you think you have a drinking problem? And I said, yes. That was a choice. I could have said no, right? It turns out, really, in my life, I have a choice-making problem. And I know I've said this quite a few times, but it's kind of a big deal. Because after putting down the drink and after recovery, it turns out the biggest problem that I had in sobriety was I had a choice-making problem, right? I was talking to one of the guys I sponsor. He came by yesterday morning. And, you know, we were talking about, you know, I believe alcoholism is a character defect. As long as I don't put alcohol into my mouth, alcoholism lists on a piece of paper right next to, you know, gambling, lying, stealing, you know, womanizing, whatever it is. With the rest of the character defects, right? Until I put alcohol into my mouth, it's just possible, right? But as soon as the alcohol goes in my mouth, something else takes place where a new demon shows up and I cannot stop drinking. And now I'm off to the races, and there isn't one place in the big book, not one place in this 12 and 12 that tells me how to fix that, right? If you're sponsoring someone and they decide to drink, you just say, just call me tomorrow when you're sober again, and we'll start from there. Because there's nothing, there's no words, there's no help that can help a person once they're under the influence, especially an alcoholic, right? But as long as I don't put a drink, it just falls under a character defect, right? And, you know, a lot of people, including myself, right, I came in this program because I got caught too much. I didn't even come in here because of my drinking. I got caught too much. Over time, through the steps and working with the sponsor and trying to figure it all out, I started to understand, really, I have a choice-making problem. I have a decision-making problem. I have a third-step problem. You know, I made all my decisions in the wrong way, right? I would, you know, I could either go to a meeting or not go to a meeting. I would choose not to go to the meeting, right? I could stay sober. I could choose to drink. I would choose to drink. You know, doing drugs, selling drugs, hanging out with bad people, buying guns, right? When I got busted, I had a gun. Not because I was into guns. It was because it was somebody wanted to trade it. I thought it was cool. I stuck it in the closet. Turns out when I got busted, they added that as a charge, right? Bad choice. Not anybody else's fault but mine, because there was a moment where I could have said, no, man, I don't want to have a gun in my house, right? No, I didn't say that. I said, I'll take it. And then I got what I got. So, you know, the third step is really about making better choices. As long as I don't put a drink in my mouth, alcoholism is not a problem. It really isn't. I mean, I haven't put a drink in my mouth for almost 17 years, and I haven't had one drinking problem, right? But have I made bad choices? Absolutely. Was I sober? Absolutely. And so, you know, this is a, you know, a real, I think that this step constantly works for me, at least all the time throughout my life. It's just choices. You know, today I got to go move boats. I had a choice. I actually was choosing not to. My coach is like, hey, man, can you come help me? And I was like, yes, I'll come help. Maybe I just needed a personal invitation. I don't know. But I wasn't really looking forward to moving these boats, and I had pretty much planned not to. But I got the personal text, and of course I said yes, because I'm recovering people pleaser. I'm not, you know, perfect. And honestly, I'm, you know, it's why I joined this club, to be, you know, to participate and do different things. But, you know, but what it all really matter comes down to is that, you know, as much as alcohol, the trouble that alcohol and drugs got me into, today I really don't have an alcohol problem. You know, I don't have a lying problem. I don't have a cheating problem. I don't have a gambling problem. But, you know, there's, you know, you come in the door and you put your bottles in the trash, right? But there's a lot of other character defects, right? Like I know a lot of people that drink gamble. Right, but if you come into this program and you are probably coming in from the alcohol, it's all of the fucking problems that come from drinking. But when we come to the program, we stop the drinking. But it doesn't always mean that we're going to stop all of the problems that come and that have evolved out of the drinking of the alcohol, right? Like gambling and cheating and lying and stealing and all these other things. But I'm not drinking, so I'm sober and this is my time. And it's just, it gets a little twisted, right? Time has become a thing. It's like this badge of honor. And really, it doesn't mean shit. Because I know a lot of people that have a lot of time that are a mess. I won't mention any names, but I have mentioned his name a few times for a person that's into his 30s years of sobriety. You know. And when, like I was telling you, my buddy and I were talking, and I said, you know, I think the most important thing is like how it works, reading how it works. Rarely have we seen a person fail who has thoroughly followed these steps, right? My buddy, who's, I don't know what he is, but, you know, he often says, you know, AA says that if you need to find, you know, outside forms of help, that it's okay. I don't believe that. I don't think it says that. I mean, it probably says, listen, if you're nuts, you should probably go see a psychiatrist or something like that. But all the answers are right here in the 12 steps of this program. People that don't want to use these 12 steps of this program aren't willing to be rigorously honest, right? And, you know, and rigorously honest means, you know, we have to like dig deep into these steps, especially the fourth, the fifth, the sixth, the seventh, the eighth, and the ninth steps. You know, but the third step is the one that allows us to make the choice to do it in the first place. You know, I am at a place today where I live my life. I make choices today. For the most part, I think I make the right ones. But if there's a moment, here's an example. I've shared on this program, I love RFK Jr. I think he's freaking a hero. And I think they're announcing today that they figured out what's causing autism. And I think he is an angel, and I love him. And if somebody out there doesn't like that, well, I hope you can change your mind, because I think he really wants the best. But I have an RFK Jr. sticker for president on the back of my car. And I've had it. You know, my wife and I went and saw RFK running for president up in Philadelphia when he announced he was running. It was an amazing experience. So glad we did it. And from that moment on, I put an RFK Jr. for president sticker on the back of my car. Well, lately, I've had some weird incidents with people. Now RFK is the reason for all of the problems, right? Now everybody hates RFK, and which is fine, you know. It's the ones, you know, it's when they don't hate you is when you're not probably doing the right work, whatever. But I had a guy pull up to me and act like he was shooting a gun at me. I had a guy come around my car the other night and rev his engines next to us, pull in front of me, and then brake check me. I don't know what it was, but I think it had to do with the RFK, because all of a sudden there's like these people are really being aggressive because of my RFK Jr. sticker. So I scraped it off my car yesterday, and my wife comes running in. She goes, "Where's your RFK Jr. sticker?" And I said, "I scraped it off." She goes, "Why?" And I go, "Because I feel like these people are being very aggressive." And the last incident was when was my wife and daughter were in the car. And this guy's brake checking, he's being aggressive, and you know, listen. I love RFK. I don't want anything bad to happen because somebody is upset to me, you know, especially not to my daughter or my wife or myself. And so I scraped it off, and she's like, "You can't do that. You can't give in to them." And I said, I can't give in to them, but I can, right? I've had that on my car for a long time. It isn't worth something bad happening to my daughter or my wife or I to have this sticker on my car. So I took it off. And ever since I took it off, God's been telling me, you know, he hasn't said anything to me. He's just been present in my life lately. And it's been more like, you know, the feeling that I'm getting from my higher power right now is like, it's okay. You know, should you have given up? Should you have taken the sticker off? But I feel like the presence of my God right now is just telling me, you know, it's okay, right? This is nothing to prove. The safety of my life and my wife and my daughter are a lot more important, especially because RFK Jr. is in the White House, right? He is working and doing amazing things, doing exactly what he wanted to do. Right. Somebody said, "Do you wish he had won the presidency?" And I said, "I do not. I'm grateful he's doing that's what he wanted to do, get the country healthy and figure out what the fuck's up with autism." I've shared before, right down the street, we have a whole school for autistic children, a school. I mean, as big as the elementary school that my other kids went to. Right. And so, you know, that's a problem. And I'm sorry that it's such a hot topic. I know that it's about money. I think most Americans would prefer that our children didn't have autism, but whatever. And so, you know, I've sort of been dealing with this. And God's not like, "You need to put that sticker back on." And God's not like, "You should have taken that sticker off a long time ago." But I feel like I'm sort of just in this place right now where God's okay with it. And but I didn't want to take the sticker off, right? I don't want to succumb to fear, right? It's just, you know, that's sort of what everybody's doing. And I'm not afraid, but I don't want anything to happen. I don't want anything to scare my daughter. And she comes out last night. She goes, "Daddy, I think I got a piece of glass." She broke an iPad or something. "I got glass in my finger. Turn on your flashlight." And so I'm getting on the flashlight, and she's looking, and she's like, "I'm so worried." And I go, "Don't be worried. It's fine, right? Rub your nail on it. If you don't feel it poking into your finger anymore, you got it out, and put a Band-Aid on it." And she's like, "Okay, thank you. I love you. Bye." I don't want my daughter to be afraid of people and driving. But, you know, that person had a choice, you know, and maybe they feel like that is going to fix something by threatening me with the fake gun in their hand or whatever it is. But so, you know, God talks to me. You know, there's also moments where I make choices in my life where God's just constantly like, dude, what have you done? Let's go. Let's fix this. How long are you going to suffer with this? How long are you going to live in this mess? And so in those moments, I'm like, you know what? You're right. Let's fix it. You know, this is where I'm at today. Where I think in the past, I'd become so numb to God's voice that either I couldn't hear it anymore or he stopped talking to me. But I have to be willing, right? And I have to be available. And yeah. So anyway, that's sort of what's been going on. I'm looking forward to the meeting tonight. I'm looking forward to the third step. And but yeah, I hope everyone's having a great day. Let me read the daily reflections, and then I'm going to finish this song because it's so good. It's a good song. Daily reflections. Let's see. A limitless load. Like a gaunt prospector, belt drawn in over the last ounce of food, our pick struck gold. Just at our release from a lifetime of frustration, knew no bounds. Father feels he has struck something better than gold. For a time, he may try to hug the new treasure to himself. He may not see at once that he has barely scratched a limitless load, which will pay dividends only if he mines it for the rest of his life and insists on giving away the entire product. Alcoholics Anonymous, page 128. When I talk to a newcomer to AA, my past looks me straight in the face. I see the pain in those hopeful eyes. I extend my hand, and then the miracle happens. I become healed. My problems vanish as I reach out to the trembling soul. Yeah. That's a great read. Well, listen, I appreciate it. I'm a little bit all over the place. I just wanted to do this podcast. I have so many things to say last night in my head while I was watching the football game. And then when I come upstairs, it's sometimes hard to pull it all together. But I really appreciate you letting me share. And I'll catch you later. Bye.